This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, especially to all the mothers that I love. Hopefully we're going to be talking to the mother that I love most in just a moment. I think Angie and Brandon are going to try and dial her up. She is, of course, traveling because now that she has gotten to the place where her kids don't always live right around her and she does what she wants now, I believe she's traveling back from her golf outing down in North Carolina or South Carolina. But Angie and Brandon are going to try and reach her and we can put her on so I can say my happy Mother's Day for everyone so that there's record that I did so. We are going to be talking to some mothers today. Let's see. Let's bring it all up. Say hi to everybody. We have Mariah. How are you, ma'am?
Hey, good morning. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers and grandmothers out there.
Thank you for coming in. We have Jen.
Hi there.
And we have Sarah.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Well, I thank everybody for taking time. let's see what we got here. A big, hi, Mom.
Hello, sweet baby boy. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much. Now, it sounds like you got us here that you're on your cell phone. I can tell by a little staticky stuff. Are you traveling safely?
We are traveling safely. I'm not driving. I'm sitting in the back seat. So
once again,
everything is good.
Setting a good example for your children.
Yes.
Don't talk and drive.
That's exactly right.
All right.
No talking, no texting, just driving.
Mom, I want to ask you a couple questions. I don't always get the opportunity to do this. I'm your first son, but then you had twin daughters. Tell me what it was like when you found out that you were going to have twins.
Oh, there was a lot of rushing around and panicking and trying to find enough bedding equipment for two at one time. Your father cobbled together, he took three cribs, some of which we had borrowed from friends of your grandparents, and he cobbled together two cribs out of the three. So it was pretty much a time of panic because it was only about a month before the due date.
Mom, this is 1970, not 1800. How could you not find out until after eight months that you were going to have twins?
The doctors back then just weren't into telling you anything. I actually requested, back then it was an X-ray. I actually requested an X-ray because I was teaching preschool. And I told the doctor if, you know, there's a lot going on here, and if I'm going to have more than one, I'm going to have to let the preschool know that I will not be coming back after Christmas.
Yes, a lovely Christmas gift for everyone in the family to bring home twins.
Yeah, except for you. I don't think you've totally appreciated that Christmas gift.
Now, why do you say that?
Well, because you were the only one, the one and only, the master of the house, and then all of a sudden, here come two more, and they're girls, for goodness sake.
Yeah, at age six, I don't think I had much interest in girls being in the house.
Yes, that's correct.
The only girl I wanted in the house was my mother.
That's right. Actually, I think you proposed to me shortly after that.
So let me ask a quick question about not just being a mother, but having a mother. Tell me a quick story about your mother.
Well, let's see. My mother was born in Pennsylvania County, Virginia. She lived in the little town of Gretna. I don't know if any of your listeners know about Gretna, but it ain't no big place, but it's growing. At least that's what the billboard says outside of town. And she grew up on a tobacco farm. She was the oldest child of her father's second family. And she went to college. Her brother, who was in the middle, went to college, and then her younger sister went to business school. But I don't think any of the older children from the first family got any kind of education beyond high school. And I do know that the brother, one of the brothers of the oldest family, helped to put the three younger children through school.
Well, real quick, your relationship with your mother, because I certainly have a great relationship with mine, and we'll talk with our guests today about relationships with their mothers. How about your relationship with yours?
Yeah, we had a really good relationship. She was very supportive, and she was always encouraging me to take care of myself. In fact, the women that I was with this weekend, we had this conversation about how our mothers were always encouraging us to have some kind of a career or a skill that, regardless of what happened to us in life, we could always take care of ourselves. She was that kind of person. She wanted me to be able to take care of myself if something happened that became a reality in my life. I loved her. She was very encouraging. Whenever anything happened, if I got any kind of an award or good grade or whatever at school, it was always positive reinforcement. She always gave positive reinforcement. I don't even remember any negative comments from her.
All right, Mom. Please travel safely. Happy Mother's Day. You know I love you a lot. I hope you do.
Okay. Love you too.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
And that's Ann Moore. Been my mother for more than 20-some years now. All right. Let's get back to our guests in the studio. We have Sarah. We have Jen. We have Mariah. Thanks, ladies, for your patience in a little quick call to my mom, because I think that's one of the reasons that I want to do the show today is to talk about relationships with your mothers and with the three of you. Everyone has children. Mariah, you're a grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for many people, sometimes because our culture has changed, we don't always live near our children. There's been a great distance between our families, and I don't know that that being a mother or a grandmother or having children, it's changed a little bit. So I want to talk about what it's like now. Let's start with Jen. This, your decision to become a mom, was that something that you grew up with? Was you knew that you were always going to have a child, and whether that included being married or not?
No. I did not always know that. And in fact, when my husband and I first started, you know, getting serious to the point where we were talking about getting married, I had said that I didn't know if I wanted children or not, because, you know, that's one of the things you need to talk about when you're planning to marry someone. And he looked at me and he said, "Well, I'll tell you, you may not know, but I see your relationship with your mother, and I know you're going to want children someday, because I can't imagine you not wanting the relationship you have with your mother with a child of your own." So he knew before I did that I was going to want a child. And it took us a while. We were married 7 years before we had a baby.
Sarah?
I didn't think I wanted kids really growing up. Children are loud and sort of annoying, especially other people's children. And, you know, I preferred pets. So it was never really my intention to be a mom.
What made you change your mind?
My mom, actually, when I got pregnant with my son, it was sort of a surprise. And when I talked to my mom about it, I said, you know, I'm not really sure that this is something I should be doing. And she said, "Oh, are you kidding? A child is going to change your life in ways you've never, ever considered." And she said, you know, and I explained to her, I said, "Mom, you know, kids are kind of, And she said, yeah, but you'll love your own child more than you could ever comprehend. So she really sort of gave me some advice I took to heart.
And I'm assuming that she was right?
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. It's probably the most thing the thing she's been most correct about in her life.
And Mariah, not, you are the grandmother in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, your child is?
Almost 2.5.
And Jen?
6 months.
Mariah, you have one child, multiple children?
I have one child.
And a grandchild?
And a grandbaby who's 14 months.
Was there a different cultural expectation of course, being a woman, you will get married, you will have children, and so the decision wasn't as much yours as it was the expectations of others?
Well, when I came of age, it was a different time. It was in the height of the hippie days and the question authority times and question everything. And so I was the first generation of women who, I mean, when I got hired at a high-tech job at a 9X, I was the first woman hired in the IT division. You know, it was a time where we were saying, well, we can do this. And then we can have babies, too. We can do all of it. Of course, we didn't realize the implications of all of that, which came along later when we were underneath the weight of all that. But it was something that I always thought I would do. I thought it was part of what my life, how my life would unfold, that I would have children eventually.
Let me ask a question that I didn't even have on my list until it came out. We were chatting pre-show in the lobby. Naming your child. Mm-hmm. Mariah, was there a lot of banter about what you're going to name your child or what not? You know, is there family consideration, family name? No, you know, no, we're not going to include a family name in here because that will upset other people for whoever we do choose.
Yeah, we made the decision we weren't going to do any family thing, and we also, it was not the era when you peeked to see what sex it was. It was, there weren't ultrasounds unless there was a very serious issue going on. So you didn't really know until the baby came out whether it was a boy or a girl. So we had a number of boy names on the roster and no girl names, and then she came out as a girl. And which actually worked out really well because we named her that day, and the name just came, and it seemed to suit her. So
Why don't you have any girl names on the roster?
Oh, we worked on them. There were a lot on the cutting room floor for various reasons.
Sarah? Naming your child?
Well, I found out that I was having a boy, so we didn't really talk about girl names. And my husband and I couldn't agree on anything because he has a Swedish background, and he thought it'd be great to name the kid something Swedish. And I couldn't go along with that. I just couldn't. And so I was about 7 months pregnant, and we were sitting there watching the news in San Diego, and the name came to us sort of out of the blue, and it was the only thing we could agree on. And it's a cool name.
And his name?
Shepherd.
Shepherd. And Mariah, your...
Oh, Laura.
And your grandchild?
Ella.
Ella. Mm-hmm.
Although there were a lot of name things going on back in the hippie days that were pretty interesting.
Rainbow.
There was no rainbows,
Sunshine.
But I knew a little girl named Sweet Pea Hoots. And when her little brother came along, his name was Huckleberry Hoots. And when the mother told me that, I said, what are you going to call him? From my frozen face, as I'm speaking. And she said, Huck. And I was thinking, Huck Hoots. Recently, I looked them up on Facebook to see. And I see two grown children in the family photos, and they have different names. There's no Huckleberry, and there's no Sweet Pea.
Very nice. Jen, how about naming your child? Again, our guest today, it is Mother's Day. We're talking with three mothers, one grandmother included in the group here on WNRN. This is Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Thank you for listening. Make sure to thank your mother. Although we'll get into that, because not everyone has a good relationship with their mother. But Jen, tell us about the process of naming your child.
Well, my husband and I, our pregnancy was planned. So we started talking about names pretty much as soon as we decided we were going to go for it. And we came up with a boy name very quickly. We had a couple of names that were, the first name is a family name on both sides, and the middle name was a name on my side of the family, and I proposed it, and my husband went, "Oh yeah, you know, that was John Lennon's name. That's good with me." So so we were good with that, and then we talked about girl names, and we couldn't agree. So when we found out we were having a girl, we were like, well, now we really have to buckle down and decide. And I, being a girl who, you know, kind of, I'm a list maker, have always been a list maker. So I had these notepads, once we had kind of exhausted all of our discussion possibilities, these notepads of lists of names that I had kept over the years, of names I thought would be cool names for kids and cool names for pets and cool names for whatever else. So I was like, well, let's go back to these lists and see if there are any names that we both like. And we found the first name there, and it turned out to be a name that was related. It's Margot, and my grandmother's middle name was Margaret, and Margot means pearl, which was her first name, so that was nice. And then we picked her middle name, just kind of went along with it, doesn't really have any family significance or anything.
Well done. It is Sunday morning wake up call, 11:16. If you have an interesting story to tell about being a mom or relationship with your mom, please call us up, 979-0919. Have Angie and Brandon out there to answer the phones. Again, Mother's Day here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call.
Support for WNRN comes from Pocahontas Live, presenting OAR with Andrew McMahon and Alan Stone, Wednesday, July 31st. Gates at 5, show at 5:30. Tickets for Dark Star Orchestra on August 3rd are on sale. There's music all summer at Pocahontas State Park in Chesterfield. Tickets at PocahontasLive.com.
Support for WNRN today comes from Italian Villa, Charlottesville's old-school diner at Emmett and Ivy. Before the game or after church, the Villa serves a full American breakfast all day. You can find burgers and specialty sandwiches for lunch, plus weekday lunch specials and an Italian dinner menu every night. That's Italian Villa, 129 Emmett Street North.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you for being here with us again today on Mother's Day. Always a special day. And, you know, again, my mom is often not even around because she's traveling, playing golf. I don't know if that makes it easier on my father or my sisters or not. Again, back in the studio with Mariah and Jen and Sarah. I guess, Mariah, I want to throw this one at you. Jen and Sarah, 2 years old, almost two, and several months old, six months?
6 months.
And Mariah, lessons brought to you by parenting.
Well, parenting and grandparenting have some similarities in their job description. There's a lot of overlap, and then there's a lot of things that are distinct. And I think the nurturing and the learning and the being with the child, all of that stuff is what everybody does, whether you're a parent or a grandparent. But I think where the grandparent does is to teach the child or show the child about what they love. I think that's really a big, important thing that a grandparent does. The parents may do it, but the parents are so busy. But I think as a grandparent, you get to think about what are the things, what's the transmission I want to give to this child. And also, when I'm with her, I have 30 more years of life experience than her parents do. So there's some of that that gets transmitted just in the way that I talk to her about things. And this is my only shot. You know, when she's my age, I'm going to be long gone. So
what about when you watching your daughter try and parent, does that make you nervous because of everything possibly being a mistake? Does that make you happy because you do have that step back where you get to watch? Does that make you laugh? Because you know that that's not going to work, ma'am. I've already tried that.
Well, she's a great mom, and she's always had a real great way with kids. You know, she started babysitting really young and was really just had a natural way with them. She does things a little differently, as this generation does, and there's a lot of things she does the same. And I think mostly my role is to just stand back and give her the room to be the good mom she can be.
What about challenges? I think, I'm assuming, again, I am not a parent. Let me throw that out there. I get to, I have a great relationship with my mother. When I graduated high school, I still had three great grandmothers alive and functioning. I have a grandmother who's still with us who just celebrated her 90th birthday at the end of last year and still rocks the car, going wherever she wants to go. No problems at this point in her life. But I'm not a mother. I'm not a parent. So I'm curious as to how things have changed for the major concerns of a mother. Mariah, when you were raising your children, what were the things that you felt that you needed to be most protective and concerned of? And I realize safety falls in that category, but if safety is what comes to mind, let's talk about it in a narrower sense. Mm-hmm. But what were you as a mother, what did you most want to help your child with?
Mm-hmm. To help her to feel strong enough in herself to go for what she was interested in, and also to not overpower her and to help her. I decided when she was in, before she was in kindergarten, that some of the issues that she had then were the same issues she was going to have as a teenager, only they were going to come back with hormones. So I decided to not use my power to overpower her, but to help her develop an internal decision-making system that was similar to mine. At that point in time, I could still influence that because she was going to make her most important life decisions when she wasn't with me.
Sarah, you have a 2-year-old boy. What, looking ahead, what is on your cheat sheet of things that you are most concerned about?
Well, excuse me. I think one of the things that I focus on as a mom is his emotional, his emotional welfare and his emotional well-being, his happiness, making sure that he, you know, as a person, I just think it's important for his mental health and his outlook on life and the way he approaches things. I want to make sure that that's something that I take good care of. The other thing that I focus a lot on is what he puts in his mouth. I'm really, really picky about what he eats and what he does, you know. So that's important to me, too, I think.
You're not bringing home Pringles.
Oh, my God, no. But, you know, and I don't know that that was something that, like, my mom was as worried about, although back in the day there wasn't as much junk food floating around. So that's something I spent a lot of time on.
Jen, let's talk for a minute about each individual's relationship with their mother. Again, it is Mother's Day here on WNRN. Thank you so much for listening. I hope everyone gets to say thank you, Mom, to their mom sometime today. 11:23, our guests today, Sarah, Jen, and Mariah, as we talk about a variety of issues relating to being a mother and having a mother. You talked about how your husband knew, recognized through you, maybe even before that you did, that you were going to want to be a mother. How did becoming a mom, having a child, 6 months old, how has that changed the relationship with you and your partner?
I think we're closer, honestly. We're in sort of what's becoming, I guess, more normal now, but it's certainly not the traditional role, where my husband stays home and is the primary caretaker for the baby while I work. And so I think that some of the things that that come about from that is it sort of brings out his more motherly and nurturing side that might not have come out if our roles were reversed. And we communicate a lot more often and a lot more regularly just about, we're both very introverted. Before we had the baby, we could go all day and talk to each other for maybe a total of 20 minutes. And that didn't mean we were mad at each other. We just both are very comfortable in our own personal space, kind of doing our own thing. And since we're both happy with that, that was fine. But you can't do that when you have a baby who has a lot of needs to take care of. So we do a lot more communicating with each other. And I think that makes us a lot closer.
Sarah, you mentioned that your son was not planned. Jen said that it was a well-planned time. How did getting pregnant and having your son change the relationship with your partner?
Well, I was engaged at the time, and we were about to get married, and so I was planning a wedding, which was a lot of fun. But not only that, then I'm planning for this new adventure with my child. So there was a lot going on initially, and I was out to here when I got married. But it was such a blur because there was so much going on. Nowadays, I find that with my husband, most of the things we talk about are our son. You know, what's he doing? What's going on? How was today? What's going on with daycare? You know, that type of thing. It's become sort of our favorite topic of conversation, which I think is fairly normal.
Mariah, you know, again, we talk about the fact that Sarah and Jen, children, mothers of fairly young children, Mariah now a grandmother as well, so a slightly different perspective to... Or two perspectives, not just being a mother, but also being a grandmother. One of the reasons that I'm so happy that you joined us today. Tell me one of your favorite stories about being a grandmother.
Well, I have an unusual role in this child's life because I'm the primary caregiver while her mom is teaching full time. So I've gotten really close to her. Favorite role? I think it's just realizing the other day when I had her outside that she was imitating all the bird calls. We were in a place where there were lots of birds, and all of a sudden I realized these little sounds. You know, children make these blithering sounds, and you don't really know they're communicating, but you don't necessarily speak baby. And she was making some sounds, and all of a sudden I realized, it was like, oh, there's the cardinal. Oh, there's the blue jay. She was imitating all the birds. That was really fun.
979-0919. Call us up if you'd like to tell a story about being a mother or tell a story about your mother. Phones are open again, 979-0919, 1128 here on WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. We have Mariah, Jen, and Sarah here sharing their experiences of being a mother and being a child. That's a big part of things. Sarah, learning from your mother. I asked Mariah a few moments ago about watching her child become a mother and sort of the parenting steps that go along with that. But talk about it from the other direction. Can you identify things that you learned from your mother that you wish to do and steps that you choose to not? One of the things that I know about you, and I don't think this is any problem to share, is that your mother had children many years apart.
16.
Mm-hmm. So you should have gotten to watch her being a mother to your sister.
Oh, no. It was great. She had my sister when I was in high school, and then I went off to college, and so I avoided having to watch my little sister grow up. And I only say that from the perspective as a selfish teenager. Children drove me nuts. So I'm glad I got out of the house while that was going on. Not that I don't adore my sister, but, you know, I didn't really see a lot of my mom raising my sister, I guess.
And, Jen, your mother still with you?
Yep.
Did you learn any lessons from her, whether they were by watching or whether they were by, you know, sort of just behavioral that you remembered?
Sure. I had the benefit of my younger sister had a child a number of years before I did. So my niece turned 9 about a month before I had my baby. So I got to watch my mom be a grandmother for 9 years before I had my own child. And I got to watch my sister be a mother for 9 years before I had my own child. And obviously, aunts and uncles have a special relationship with their nieces and nephews, too. So I got to participate in that kind of relationship, which I do think, you know, helps you prepare in a way for parenting. But yeah, I mean, I think remembering my own childhood and seeing my mom placed a large importance on education, which is true for my husband's family as well. Actually, my mother-in-law was a teacher, and I trained to be a teacher and did not like teaching, so I don't teach anymore. But education's a very high value in our family, and I think it will continue to be. And just other parenting things that I've picked up and still remember and then got to see again as an adult with my niece.
I want to ask the three of you, and I'm going to tell my story first about my mother. A trait that you have seen of your mother that you think has been passed on to you or wish that was passed on to you. And I share this because I find my mother to be a very loving person who can easily emotionally connect with someone else. So several Christmases ago, Christmas Day, I have a very large extended family, and one of my brothers-in-law had recently lost his father. And so everyone comes over to our house, this large group, 30 plus for Christmas breakfast, even more at Christmas lunch, comes over, and that brother-in-law steps into the house, and my mother almost runs to him and gathers him in this large hug because she recognizes that this is a very difficult day for him. And this is a young man who does not cry. No, I cry at everything. I'm ready to tear up now. And I found that to be such a special moment for me to watch, not necessarily to participate in, but to me, it is one of the identifying traits of my mother. And it's one of the reasons that I love her. And I don't know if anyone else has a story they'd like to share, but we're going to take a big break for you to think about that. Thank you so much for listening to WNRN here on Mother's Day.
WNRN and Blue Mountain Brewery present the Red Wing Roots Music Festival, July 12th through 14th at Natural Chimneys Park in Mount Solon, Virginia. Hosted by the Steel Wheels and featuring Del McCurry Band, Sam Bush Band, Tim O'Brien, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, and J.D. McPherson. The full lineup and tickets can be found at redwingroots.com.
WNRN is supported by Ragged Mountain Running Shop, No. 3 Elliewood Avenue on the UVA corner. Ragged Mountain specializes in hard-to-fit feet, injury resolution, and training advice, and features nearly a dozen brands of running shoes. Charlottesville's community running headquarters since 1982, the Ragged Mountain Running Shop.
Hi, I'm Greg Beam from the Stanton Downtown Development Association. Stanton Jams will take place on Saturday, May 18th on Beverly Street in downtown Stanton. You can bring the whole family for Stanton Jams, where local bands play from noon until 10 p.m. This event is free and fun for all ages. You can explore, shop, dance, create, dine, and have a blast all day long in downtown Stanton. Jams is sponsored by the SDDA, Shenandoah Valley Regional Airport, Baja Bean Company, and WNRN. For more information, visit stantondowntown.org. I'm Greg Beam, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And happy Mother's Day to everyone out there. Thank you so much for being with us here on WNRN and the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Our guests, Sarah, Mariah, and Jen. We were just talking about, I just told a little story about a beautiful trait that I feel makes my mother distinct and loving to me. Mariah, you raised your hand. You had a story you wanted to tell about your mom?
Yeah, my mom, I was very strong, creative, independent, and had a lot of courage. She was someone that 45 years ago had a store where she had Oriental rugs, and she used to go to New York and dicker with the Iranian men who didn't have a clue where she was coming from. My story about my mother that really says it all about who she was as a person was in 1944, when she was 18 and getting married, she and my father sat down with the minister to talk over the wedding ceremony, and he went over the ceremony, and when he said the part about love, honor, and obey, she said, "I will love him, I will honor him, but I will not obey him." And he said, "But that's a ceremony." And she said, "Yeah, but can't you take that out?" And he said, "I can't take it out, it's a ceremony." And she said, "It's just two words, can't you take it out?" And he said, "Well, I can say I will, and if I do that, I may get to the ceremony, and I may say it anyway, because I'm so in the habit of doing that." And she looked him in the eye and said, "And if you do, I won't say I do." And right before the wedding, there was a lightning storm. The lights went out in the church for an evening service. They lit the candles, and he did not say obey.
Smart man.
Oh, I love that. Jen, did you have a story you wanted to share? Again, don't feel obligated. It's not exactly the easiest thing to pop to mind after I asked you about 60 seconds ago.
No, I have a story about my mom that, to me, demonstrates both her... My mom was kind of strict and authoritarian and wanted to make sure that we did all of the right things, but at the same time, she was incredibly fiercely loving and demonstrative of that love, and I think this story demonstrates both of those things. When I was in eighth grade, some girls in my German class, we were taking an exam, and they were cheating on the exam, and I happened to be sitting sort of near them, and I was always a very good student. And my German teacher assumed that they were cheating off of me, that I was giving them the answers. And so she implicated me in this cheating thing. And it wasn't anything that she had, you know, my German teacher wasn't a bad person. She just thought that that's what had happened. And so she called my mom at work, and I stayed with my grandparents after school, and I was so upset about it, and I knew I was going to be in terrible trouble, but I didn't know how I could prove that I wasn't part of it. But I told my grandparents noticed that something was wrong, because I wasn't really eating dinner, and that wasn't ever a thing that was a problem for me. So I told them what had happened, and when my mom came to pick me up, my grandparents stood up for me, and she had been very angry with me when she walked in the door, and she realized, because she knew me well enough, that the fact that I had told them what had happened and why I was upset, I wouldn't have done that if I was honestly guilty, because I wouldn't have wanted them to be ashamed of me, that I would have kept that private. And so once she had that realization that really I was not at fault, she turned 180, and immediately we went home, and she called the teacher at home and had a conversation with her, and I did not get in trouble.
Sarah, we're talking about being a mother again. Sarah, Jen, and Mariah here on Mother's Day at WNRN. We're talking about all kinds of things here. Being a mother, having a mother, whatever happens in those situations. You work full-time, correct?
Correct.
You mentioned earlier about daycare. Is there any guilt involved with that, or is that still an issue? I know that at some time, as we sort of moved along from few mothers working to a very large number of mothers working, is there any guilt that goes along with being a mother in that situation?
I think... Honestly, there probably is. I would be the first to tell you I'd love to stay home and be a full-time mom and, you know, go to the park every afternoon and that type of thing. It's just not a reality or a possibility in my life. But the time that I do spend with my son is focused, and I make the most of it, and it's quality time. And I also have a wonderful, wonderful daycare provider who is one of the most amazing people I've ever met. And so I know that when I hand him off in the morning, he's getting the best care I could possibly give him. And when I pick him up, he will have had a great day. So I do feel that the time that he has to spend away from me is also quality time.
Jen, you mentioned how your husband provides the majority of daycare, or I'm not sure what phrase you used. Is he home all the time?
Yeah, he is a writer and a freelance editor, so he kind of fits. He has had to cut back considerably on how much of that he does. But since he's home all the time anyway, it made the most financial sense for us for him to just cut back a little bit on his freelancing and him take care of the baby. And then I have the job that provides us with healthcare benefits and that sort of thing.
Is there any, again, the many people in our culture expect the woman to provide the nurturing? Is there any, have you accepted the fact that it works well both ways and I'm not the one who needs to do that? Is there guilt involved in being a mother in a different setup?
I think that there's guilt to an extent. And I don't think it's necessarily related to the way that our days are arranged so much as just I think there's always guilt when you're not spending time with your children. And I have a job that requires that I travel periodically, not frequently, but a couple of times a year. I'm gone for a week or more at a time. And I just recently had the first 5 days away, and that was hard and was made even harder by the fact that my husband was caring for the baby and our two dogs and also organizing a move for us because we just moved into a new house, and the move took place while I was gone, and then his grandfather passed away that same week. So it was a difficult week, but we made it through.
Mariah, you as being a parent, as being a grandparent, I'm not sure what your working situation was as a parent, and then watching your daughter, I'm not sure what her situation is either. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, what I would say, I set up my life so that I could be at home. I left my corporate work and was teaching yoga and meditation and took a job as a small town librarian. So I had a few, like 20 hours a week, so I could had a lot of flexibility, so I was with her a lot. So I would say, as I watch my daughter, I think that it's sadness that she feels, not guilt. She feels happy that she's with me. I mean, there couldn't be a better person that's with your child other than the grandmother. But she every day she goes off, I know she feels sad that she's not there at home with her, and in fact is changing her life, and they're moving and taking a job in New England so their husband can be teaching at a prep school so that they have housing so they can live on one income, which I find it astonishing that we've gotten to the point that we have to have two incomes in order to have our families. It just is a little astonishing to me.
Do you think that, you think it's harder or easier now to raise a family? Because certainly things have changed enough where now you need, for many, you need two incomes. But there are also, whether you want to look at it from electronics, or, you know, however, society has changed and enough new inventions and enough differences between now and 1970 or further back. Has that made parenting easier or more difficult?
Oh, I think it's much more difficult. I think it's much, much more, I mean, like, quantumly more difficult. It's just exponentially more difficult.
Why? What makes you say that?
Well, first of all, just everything you do, there's all these things. You're overwhelmed with information, and you have to sort through, like, all these books and all of these, the internet things and what you should be doing. It's like we had maybe two or three books on parenting and birthing that were out and were popular at that time. I mean, and what we turned to was other moms, and you listened to a few opinions and then you made your decision. You kind of went with what you felt was right. I think now it's harder to go with what you feel is right because there's so much information that may be saying it's wrong. And also just the plethora, there's just so much information. I mean, if you're having a colicky baby, you search colicky babies. I mean, my God, there's a million things there, literally, that you could read about colicky babies. And how do you get to what you want? And how much time do you waste or spend, maybe it's not wasting, but spend trying to sift through that just to find an answer with what you're going to do with your baby that's colicky. And your grandmothers are far away, so you can't turn to them and the aunties. You know, I think it's much more complex. And the balancing the work and home life stuff, I think that's gotten more complicated. And the amount of stuff that you think that we buy for our babies costs more and it's more it's just the layers of complexity go on and on.
Sarah, you're nodding your head.
Oh, the external influences are overwhelming, and everyone, there's an opinion everywhere. And I agree, all the things that they're marketed to parents they bombard new parents with a sense of guilt. You have to have the best for your child, or your child is going to be missing out on something. It's ridiculous. I think that the whole parental experience needs to be simplified completely. I mean, there's too much out there, overwhelming.
11:46 on the wake-up call. Mm-hmm. Happy Mother's Day to everybody. We have a panel in the room today from new moms to grandmoms, asking all kinds of questions and telling all sorts of stories. Again, Jen and Sarah and Mariah here with us. Jen, when did you realize, whether you personally realized it or your mother told you this, that you weren't a child anymore?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard... Well, obviously, I still am a child to my mom. She's fond of saying how I'm always going to be her baby. But I, as far as just being an adult who's totally out on my own, was probably when I was in graduate school. I went straight from my undergraduate education. I graduated and 2 weeks later started my graduate program. And at that point, my mom and dad and my grandmother had all been helping with, you know, college expenses up till that point. But grad school, I was totally on my own. Had to make my own way, make my own money, pay my own bills and pay for my own, you know, tuition and make that all work. And while I had two roommates at that time to share expenses, that was all on me. I had to, you know, find the roommates and deal with the housing and sign the leases. And I came out of that knowing that I could take care of myself. And then when my husband and I got engaged, we had talked about moving in together at that point because my roommate at the time was moving away. And I said, you know what? It's not that we're so old-fashioned that we don't want to live together before we get married, but I've never lived 100% by myself, and I'd like to do that. So I moved into my own place and lived totally by myself for a year before we got married.
You think that was helpful in I don't know, identifying yourself, and that should help you be a better mother, I would think?
Yeah, I do. I feel like I have a lot of self-confidence because of those experiences.
Mariah, how about you? You have a daughter. When did you recognize that she was no longer the child that you had helped raise? Or is that not true? It's never happened.
No, it's happened. No, I think it was when she went to China in college for the semester and told me that she loved me, but she didn't want me to visit her because she wanted to do it on her own. It was like, okay. And then if I didn't get it then, about a year later, when she graduated from college, she went to Chile and ended up living there for 4 years. So she definitely was on her own. And the last year she was there, she was the vice principal of the school. So it's sort of like, well, she's really a grown-up.
11:49 on the wake-up call. Stay with us.
Support for WNRN Today comes from L. Oppelman, serving Lynchburg for 122 years. In addition to loans, L. Oppelman deals in jewelry, musical instruments, rifles, and handguns, game systems, TVs, cameras, and tools, with new inventory arriving every day. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street, downtown Lynchburg.
You can support independent music radio WNRN by donating your car. Get rid of your unwanted vehicle, qualify for a tax deduction, and support the programming you rely on. You can find out more by donating your car, motorcycle, boat, or RV at WNRN.org/donate-your-car.
All right, back in action with our Mother's Day show today, our guests Mariah and Sarah and Jen. Mariah is a grandmother. Sarah, almost 2-year-old, and Jen with a 6-month-old. So let's talk a minute about the difference in generations, because, Mariah, you grew up during the 60s. Is that what you keep talking about, the hippies?
Well, when I was coming of age, you know, the hippies were around. And, I mean, really, the hippies weren't about bell bottoms and the hair. It really was much more about the philosophy, and it was about questioning authority and questioning what was, and does it make sense, and if it didn't, to reinvent it, and also kind of personal freedom and not power over, but for your own power within, moving from that place. That was really what was, when I was coming of age, was going on. And I think that influenced, of course, the parenting. And so when it got to parenting, a lot of us felt that the media had a lot of negative messages with commercial TV and such. So a lot of us didn't have TV. In fact, I sent my daughter a thing on Facebook that was 29 ways to know that if you were raised by hippies or not. And at least half the list she could check off. And then I added 3 more to the list. And then she added some more, like, you know, what about the nutritional yeast on the popcorn and the nettles I had to eat every spring, no matter what, you know, those kinds of things. And that one kid broke back and said, yeah, and that I didn't know what color Grover was until I got to be 6-year-old because we had a black and white TV.
That's hysterical. Sarah, you talk about the difference between your ages between you and your sister, 16, mm-hmm. Is that right? Mm-hmm. So were the rules different for you being raised by your mother to what you watched and heard from your mother raising your sister 16 years later?
My sister and I were brought up very differently in that when I was little, my parents got divorced when I was fairly young, and so it was my mom and I on our own sort of for many years. And then when my mom remarried and had another child, she raised my sister in a complete family, nuclear family sort of way. So my sister was definitely very much my mother's daughter, whereas growing up, I was sort of more like my mom's companion, if that makes sense. I hope that doesn't sound negative.
No, it sounds completely mm-hmm. sensible. In fact, you see that a lot today, whether it's fashionable or whatever, that, again, many mothers are patted on the back or, you know, not yelled at, but, you know, you shouldn't always try and be your daughter's best friend. That many people say that's not the way for proper parenting, and that things don't always work out well if you try and be your daughter or your son's friend rather than mother. Jen, did you were a solo child, correct?
I was in a blended family. My parents divorced when I was 5, and my mom remarried when I was 8, and my stepfather had a child already from a previous marriage who was about 1.5 years younger than me. So, and he had primary custody of her, so we all lived together as a family from the time I was 8. When you hear me talk about my dad, I'm talking about my stepdad in most cases, and when I'm talking about my sister, it's my stepsister, because we are that close. I don't really think of them as step relatives at all. They're my family.
It is 11:54 here on the Wake Up Call, talking with Jen and Mariah and Sarah here, finishing up our Mother's Day program. Quick note, whether you're an Apple or an Android user, it's easy to get WNRN on your phone. For Android users, we recommend the TuneIn app, which is available at Google Play. WillowTree Apps has created the WNRN phone app, which you can find at the App Store or at WNRN.org. Just click on Listen to download the app. All right, back with our guest. Just a few moments left.
I was just going to say, speaking of all of that technology, your generation may be using it and very fond of it, but our generation invented it.
Well, and that may be true in some ways, but it's not unusual to see where the, I don't want to say the wealthy, but certainly the folks getting much notoriety are younger than 25 years old, because they're the ones who are making the... I was listening to a show on, not on WNRN, sorry, the other day, where they were interviewing the guys from Google and whatever their age is now, but they invented Google when they were 19 and 20.
Yeah,
I was just... dropped out of college, I believe.
I was talking more about the iPods and the iPads and the iPhones. Yes. I think, back to you, what you were talking about before with the generational thing, I think that each parenting generation, when I look back at how my grandmother was parenting and how my mother was parenting and then how I parented and how my daughter parented, and I even knew my great-grandmothers who were born before the turn of the century, the last one, you know, it just seems like in the time that you're living, it shapes how you decide to parent, whatever the zeitgeist is, whatever the pressures are, whatever the cultural stuff, whatever the financial stuff is, and the educational in vogueness or not, all of that adds up to how you choose to parent.
Well, and I think the needs of the time as well, because my great grandparents were children of, you know, farmers, and my great grandmother, who I was probably closest to, was one of 17 children, and at that time that was fairly standard for, you know, you had a farm and you couldn't afford to hire people, so you had children.
Mm-hmm. And I would say too that I don't have a TV. We don't watch TV in my house, but it was important to me to raise my son as sort of close to the farm as possible, and I do live on a hobby farm, and that's one thing that I think is going to be really cool for him when he grows up.
All right, we do have a caller. I'm not sure whose mom this is, but Laura is on the phone. Hi, Laura.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. So, do you have a story to tell?
Yeah, I just was listening to your show, and Mariah is actually my mother, and I just wanted to say that one of the most amazing things about motherhood is, as I become a mom, is I reflect, of course, on my own, realizing all these things that my mother did for me to get me past this point, even though Ella won't remember all these things that we're doing now that we do and share as young mothers, new mothers. You just appreciate that. You know, the caretaking as it turns into friendship. And I think my mother and I, what we have is, you know, we all have our moments, but I'm able to recognize always that we have a very deep friendship, which is where, at one point you asked them kind of where the parenting ends. And, you know, I think the parenting goes on forever, but there's a nice transition from when it's the just mother-daughter role to then it becomes the peer role, and you enjoy each other as adults also happens in that that transition. And I'm really appreciative of that, and acknowledging that as an adult is recognizing more of a peer friend rather than just a, you know, a being a child or being parented.
Laura, thank you so much for that call. I appreciate that.
No problem. And, you know, we've had a chance to do a lot of things that I think of as friends, and now I think of my closest friends. My mom is among those people.
Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you so much. You have a great day.
All right, just a moment or two left with our guests here on Mother's Day, Jen and Sarah and Mariah. Mariah, what does that say? I mean, what does that do to hear Laura call up and say those things?
It touches me very deeply. I'm tearing up. Yeah, I'm very touched. I feel like I raised a good daughter, and I had really amazing material to work with. She's an amazing person, and I feel honored to be her mom.
Sarah, just last few words from you about your mother.
I am grateful that my mom is who she is, because it's definitely shaped the way I'm a mom, and I know I see a lot of my son and my mom, a lot of my mom in my son and his personality, which makes me love him all the more.
And Jen, last words from you about your mom.
I think my mom was a wonderful mother. And I am very appreciative of the relationship we still have and the help that she still gives me as an adult.
I hope everyone out there listening today has a mother, a good relationship with someone who fills the role of their mother, to call them and wish them Happy Mother's Day. And at some point, you need to sit down and ask a few questions so you can learn a little bit about their life or your grandmother's life that you may not know about, so you can carry that forward. So, Happy Mother's Day, everybody. Take care.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlotte.